In honor of the Siyum of Masechta Erevin, we'd like to give an Ian Shear, and we're going to focus on the beginning of the 8th Perek as our Siyum, with the Mishnah Daf Pei Beis Amid Beis, and we'll take a look at a Sugya on Pei Gimel, maybe even Pei Dalad. We may have to do this in sections. And I base myself to a large extent on a Sefer called Torah Srefoil. I'm not sure that I always understand what he's saying. I'll try the best I can. The Mishnah tells us, and we'll take a look inside, Kamahushi Uro, Mazon Shte Sudos. What is the shear for Erev Tchumen, the minimum amount that he has to put down to be Kona Shvisa? Mazon Shte Sudos will call Echad V'Echad. He may be setting up the Erev Tchumen on behalf of Reuven, Shimon, and Levi. He needs Mazon Shtei Sudos for each one of them, so that each one of them is Kona Shvisa in the place where he has his Shtei Sudos. And then he can walk out of that area for 2,000 Amos in each direction. Now, the Rambam, in his Pirush HaMishnayos and the Bar Tanura here on this Mishnah, both interpret that he's Kona Shvisa, and in order to do so, he needs Mazon Shtei Sudos, which he needs for Shabbos. And the Tosfos Yontif raises the following question: why is it that Shtei Sudos is enough? We know that there's a minimum requirement of 3 Sudos on Shabbos. And the Gemara Masechta Shabbos on Kuf Yud Tes derives this from Psukim, that the Torah requires Achila 3 times, and we need a minimum of 3 Sudas on Shabbos. Relative to Shabbos, the mazel that he needs to be Kovesh Visa ought to be 3 Sudas. That's the question of the Tosfos Yontif. And it's a very, very profound question. To answer this question and justify both the Rambam and the Bar Tanura's understanding that Mazon Shtei Sudos is what you need to eat for the day, and therefore that's the minimum amount but sufficient to be Kona Shvisa and set up an Erev Tchumen, we'll raise the following question. How do you define the nature of the chiyuv of Shalosh Sudos with regard to Shabbos? And there are two possibilities. We'll start with the simple possibility, which is in fact the Rambam, who codifies the halach of Shalosh Sudos in Perek Lamed, Milchus Shabbos, together with the laws of Kibud V'Oneg. The Rambam has dedicated an entire chapter in Milchus Shabbos to Kibud V'Oneg, and when he discusses Oneg Shabbos, he formulates and codifies this requirement of 3 Sudos. Clearly, the Rambam holds that the Kiyum of Gimel Sudos is a Kiyum of Oneg Shabbos. And from that perspective, we really understand how the increment of one extra Sudah on Shabbos is a Kiyum HaMitzvah, because during the week all he needs is 2 Sudos. And if he has 2 hefty meals during the course of a day, that's sufficient. And that was normal practice back in the day. On Shabbos, though, there's a new element that enters into the equation, and that's the mitzvah of Oneg Shabbos, and that requires a 3rd Suda. And that's the way the Rambam has it in Perek Lamed Milchus Shabbos. No question that the Yesoda Yesodos and the nature of the Chiyuv of Gimel Sudas according to the Rambam is Oneg Shabbos. And I'm thinking that from that perspective, we may have an answer already up front to the Kasha, the Tosfos Yontif. But before we get to that, let's just present another possible understanding of the Chiyuv and the Yesod of Gimel Sudos. As we said, the Gemara derives it from Achila 3 times. It could be that the nature of this takana, of this requirement of Gil Sudos, is achilos. Gimel achilos. During the course of the week, we eat two achilos. On Shabbos, the Torah reveals to us, and again, I don't know if it's a drasha gemura, we might call it an asmachta, that you require three achilos. Now, what would be the basis for redefining Gimel Sudos, Shalosh Sudos, in such a way that it's not a kiyum of Oneg Shabbos, but it's a machayev of three achilos, and achila means achila suda. My good friend, Reb Chaim Ilson, Shlita, points out that if you look in the Sefer HaYireim of one of the Bali Atosus, Reb Elezer Mimetz, you will see that when he classifies mitzvos, he has them in groups. And that's very telling and revealing about the nature of a mitzvah and its essence. So, for example, he has a siman that's dedicated to those mitzvahs which he calls She'enom Nasim Ra Lebrios Kiyim LaShamayim. And that group of mitzvos are what we call Bein Adam LaMokom. And that's how he classifies it. It's not Ra Lebrios, it's Ra LaShamayim. In any event, in that context, in Simon Tov Yud Beis, he brings down the mitzvah of three sudos on Shabbos. And there's another siman, which we want to call to our attention, and that is siman Tzadi Beis. What does he have in siman Tzadi Beis? He has not the mitzvah of Gimel Sudos on Shabbos, but rather mitzvahs of Achilos. And let's take, for example, the mitzvah of matzah. That would be a classic example of a mitzvah achila. In that context, and under that category, the Sefer Yireim classifies the mitzvah of Gimel Seudos. It's very interesting because when he gets to Siman Tov Yud Beis of Isurim She'enam Ra Lebrios Ela Ra LaShamayim, there he has the mitzvah of Onik Shabbos. You would have thought that the mitzvah of Onik Shabbos and the mitzvah of Gimel Seudos should be classified together. But the Sefer Yireim goes out of its way to separate it. He's got in Siman Tzadi Beis, amongst the various mitzvahs of Achila, he's got Gimel Seudos. And then when he talks about mitzvahs that are Bein Adam LeMakom, that are Ra LaShamayim if he doesn't fulfill them, he has on the list the mitzvah of Onik Shabbos, without mentioning Gimel Seudos. We derive from the Sefer Yireim in two ways the conclusion that he disagrees with the Rambam about the fundamental nature of the Machayev of Gimel Seudos on Shabbos. According to the Sefer Yireim, the mitzvah of Gimel Seudos is not anchored in Onik Shabbos, and the proof is that he doesn't classify Gimel Seudos together with Onik Shabbos in Siman Tov Yud Beis. So when he gets to Siman Tov Yud Beis and he mentions the mitzvah of Onik Shabbos, he omits the mitzvah of Gimel Seudos. He has instead classified the mitzvah of Gimel Seudos together with other mitzvahs of Achila. And here we have the flip side of the coin to prove that the definition and the essence of Gimel Seudos, according to the Sefer Yireim, is not Onik Shabbos, but rather Achilos. Just like there's a mitzvah Achila of Matzah, Achilos Kodshim, and you have a mitzvah of Achila maybe on Sukkot, you know, various cases of mitzvahs Achila. Maaseh Sheni might be a mitzvah of Achila, and so forth and so on. Within that group, he classifies Gimel Seudos, separating it completely from his classification later on in Siman Tov Yud Beis of mitzvahs that are Ra LaShamayim, meaning Onik Shabbos. Now, before we get back to Erev Tchumen to try to answer the question of the Tosfos Yontif, right up front, with regard to this Chakira, is Gimel Sudas an extra kiyum of Onik Shabbos, or is it the Achilos of the day? And the Torah says that the day of Shabbos, seventh day of the week, every week, generates a chiyuv of Gimel Sudos. Let's mention another few nafkaminas, leaving Erev Truma. We'll get right back to Erev Truma. For example, the Chasam Sofer has an analysis of what's called Hanoas Grono versus Hanoas Meyav. And this is a machlokas between Rabbi Yochanan Reish Lakish and Chulin and Yuma and many places as to what defines Achila. Says the Chasam Sofer that in certain cases, even if I accept that Hanoas Grono is Achila, it's not going to suffice. Let's say, for example, to violate Yom Kippur, where the Torah says, V'nisem, there a dry and cut mechanical maisachila of Hanas Grono would not constitute a violation of Yom Kippur, because it's all about Inu Nefesh. And here you need Hanas Meov in order to violate and upset Inu Nefesh B'chayv Kores for violating V'nisem Esnashel Seichem. And it's fascinating because in the case of Chalev, for example, if he were to eat a half a zayis of chalev and then regurgitate it and eat the same half a zayis second time, he might be chayev malchus for eating a full kezayis, even though hanos meyov he didn't have. The answer is that's called a dry cut mais achila that we define as achila. Suda Shabbos, says the Chasam Sofer, requires not just Hanos Grono, but Hanos Meyav. You need Sviya. And the reason for that is because of Onik Shabbos. It's not Onik Shabbos if you chew something and then vomit it up. You need to satiate. It could be that although the Chasam Sofer is absolutely correct and his logic is persuasive and it's absolute. You can't argue it. It's totally convincing. But that's according to the Rambam and the Bar Tanura. They understood that the mitzvah of Gimel Sudos is a mitzvah of Onik Shabbos. How could you have Onik Shabbos without Hanos Meyav? But if you accept or belezem imetz in the Sefer Yireim that the mitzvah is three achilos, then we could go back to our classic universal definition in Kol HaTarkul of what constitutes an achila. And if Hanoas Grono is as a mais achila, then that's enough. Three mais achilas, three sudos, and you are yotze. Another possible nafkabina that I thought of, again, before we get to Erev Tchumen, is whether or not you could be mekayim this mitzvah of Gimel Sudos with a kezayis. Could be that if we need Onik Shabbos, maybe Kezayis, although it does constitute a Mais Achila, it's not enough to achieve Onik Shabbos. And therefore, I might require Kebetza, Kedei Sviya, whatever it might be. But if I go with the Sefer Yireim, that there are three Achilos on this day of Shabbos, then if your definition, Ein Achila Pchusami Kezayis, is a Kezayis, he ate a Kezayis, he fulfilled the mitzvah of Gimel Sudos with three times Kezayis. Other nafkaminas that I thought of, perhaps, would there be a difference between Tochkedei Achilas Pras or Liachar Kedei Achilas Pras? If you're talking about a classic Mais Achila, we might have to use those standards to evaluate whether you have an Achila or not. But if on the other hand you're talking about Onik Shabbos, he wants to take his time and eat over the course of 10 minutes, spread out his Achila and his pleasure, he would have a Kiyum of Onik Shabbos. Now we get back to the kasha of the Tosis Yontif. The Tosis Yontif understood that in order to be Kona Shvisa, you need mazon of the sudos of the day. And therefore he asks the following question, raises the objection. Bishlema, during the week I understand that the sudos of the day are shtayim. Two sudos is what you eat. And one achila, and another achila, and that's going to satiate you for the entire day. A 24-hour unit period requires nothing more than two achilos. But, says the Tosis Yontif, on Shabbos we have to have a third achila. And therefore, mazon shtei sudos is not going to be sufficient. We need mazon shalosh sudos. Masha Enkein, the Rambam, and the Bar Tanura, they understood that the halacha being Kodesh Visa can be generated by what we call an achila, and even on Shabbos, all I need is two achilos. True, I need a third suda, but that's for the kiyum of Onik Shabbos. That has nothing to do being Kodesh Visa. Kinyan Shvisa Lechud and Onik Shabbos Lechud. Through, via the third achila, I'm a kind of mitzvah of Onik Shabbos. But as far as how many achilos I need today on Shabbos, like any day of the week, all I need is two sudos, two achilos. And therefore, Mazon Shtei Sudos is enough. So because the Rambam holds that the third suda of Shabbos has nothing to do with achilos, with mice achilos, but rather has to do with an extra kiyum of oneg, therefore it's irrelevant to the question of being Kodesh Visa. Kodesh Visa is a secular mundane issue about how many achilos you need during the course of the day. Two is enough, even on Shabbos. The Machayev of the third Suda, that comes under a different mitzvah. That's independent. That's oneg Shabbos. But as far as the Sefer Yoreim is concerned, and if the Tosis Yontif understood like the Yoreim, that Gimel Sudos are derived from Gimel Achilos, then on this day, the seventh day of the week, I need Gimel Achilos. Hence the question, why is Mazon Shtei Sudos sufficient? And now we're ready to move on a little bit Pnima into this Perek Ketzad Mishtatfe. Let's now fast forward to Daf Pei Gimel Amud Beis. And we have the Mishnah on Daf Pei Gimel Amud Beis. And the Mishnah says that Anshei Chotz v'Anshei Mirpeses Sheshachachu v'lo Ervu Kol shegavah asor tfachim lamirpeses pachos mikan lachotzer. We have a case of a tail, which is a mound or a pillar, and in a sense it is accessible to both the mirpeses, they're high up above ground level, and to the ground level, the chotzer. And the question is, as far as Shimush is concerned, which one of the two, whether it's the Bnei HaMirpeses or the Bnei HaChotzer, will be allowed to use this amud, this tail? On top of the tail, they can put their objects and so forth and so on. Now, if they had made an Erev between the two of them, then they become one unified Rishus, and obviously this third Rishus of the tail, which is accessible to both, would be swallowed up and would be covered by the Erev. But the Mishnah wants to know what happens in event that they did not make an Erev. The Mishnah establishes that it all depends how tall is this Amud. Is it more than 10 Tfachim? Is it less than 10 Tfachim? If it's more than 10 Tfachim, then the access to this Amud is more comfortable, it's more accessible to the Bnei HaMirpeset, who are on the top level. If on the other hand it's below 10 Tfachim, then it's more accessible to the Bnei HaChotzer. The Mishnah goes on to address a parallel case of Chulyas HaBor V'Asela, Shem Gvor Masor Tfachim. If this Chulya Sabar, which is the outer ground that surrounds the bar is the cistern, is underground, if it reaches 10 Tfachim, then it's more accessible to Be'er Merpeses, and they get the Tashmish up there in the Be'er Merpeses. If it's less than 10 Tfachim, then it's designated for the Chatzir. Now the Mishnah establishes the following condition. When do we assume that if this chulya has 10 tfachim, then it's considered designated for the Bnei HaMirpeses because it's 10 tfachim high? That's only smucha. Aval mufleges afil gavo asor tfachim. lachatz. So we're talking about a chulia that's within close proximity of the merpeses, and it's 10 tefachim high. Ezi smucha, how do you define close proximity? Kol she'ein rechoka arba tefachim merpeses. It's not more than or equal to 4 tefachim away from the merpeses. Now let's take a look at Rashi on the Mishnah. Rashi, towards the end of the Mishnah, Dibra Maskel Kol Shegava Yud, says in Yesh Bachotzetel O Amud Gava Yud, so coming up from the ground of the Chotz, rising up in height, is either a tel or an Amud. If it's Gava Yud, and it's Somuch L'Merpeses, then Rishus Merpeses Sholetes Bo Mishtamshim Bo, Mishtamshim Heim Bo Avalo Bnei Chotz. Fine. So Rashi clearly understood that this discussion about Samuch and the Bamedvar Amur met the Sefer, the Mishnah of Bismucha, is referring to the case of Merpeses as well. And yet, when Rashi gets down to the Sefer to interpret Bismucha, the requirement and the condition of Bismucha, Rashi says, Shachulia Smucha Limerpeses. As if he's interpreting the requirement of smucha as relating only to the case of chulia in the sefer, but not to the case of merpeses in the resha, meaning the tail of the amud. It's a bit of a pella that Rashi, Divrei Maaseh B'smucha, only focuses our attention on chulia, as if to say that chulia has the requirement of smucha le Limer Pesas. But that's not true, and Rashi himself admits that that's not true. So why does Rashi feel that there's an extra emphasis here with regard to Smucha on the Chulya Sabar, seemingly de-emphasizing, if you will, the case of the Tel and the Amud, which is Yud Tfachim High, and it has to be Smucha to the Merpesas? Now, what we're talking about here is what's called Tashmisho B'kosha or Tashmisho B'noach. If you have a tel or an amud that's above 10 tefachim, it's considered Tashmisho B'noach for the B'nai Merpeses on top, but only on the condition that it's smucha. Otherwise, if they have to stretch out more than 4 tefachim, that's not considered Tashmisho B'nachas. So the question we're asking is, why does Rashi emphasize the case of chulia as far as the requirement of smucha? In order to answer this question, we're going to raise a safek in halacha. When we say that the, for example, chulia sabar has to be smucha, or in the case of the amud of the tail, it has to be smucha, what are we saying? Are we saying that the entire tel is within arba tefachim of the merpeses? What would be in a case where only part of the amud, that part that tips towards or is proximate to the merpeset, is within 4 tefachim, but the rest of the amud is outside of the area of 4 tefachim? In other words, our hakir is the following. Is it necessary that the halacha, the requirement of smucha, has to swallow up the entire amud, and the entire surface of the amud is within 4 tefachim of the merpeses? Or is it sufficient that part of the amud dips into that area, which is within 4 tefachim? That's enough to give me rights in the merpeses to use the amud, even though the rest of the amud is outside of that area of 4 tefachim. Perhaps logic would compel us to believe that it's enough that part of the amud is within 4 tefachim. That already sets up the amud as an entity. The entire amud has a shem smucha, and therefore it's considered as an extension of and designated for the tashmish of the b'nei Hamir Peset, because the Bnei Hamir Peset, once they use part of the Amud, which is within approximate 4 Tfachim, then they use the entire Amud. So the Amud is to be viewed and defined as an entity. That would seem to be the logical way of understanding it, but how do we prove that? And perhaps the answer to that question is the case of Chulias HaBar. In Chulias HaBar, we have a proof, perhaps, that it's sufficient to have smucha in part of the Amud Tel, or in this case, the Chulias HaBar. How is that so? And the answer is the following. Although, again, I can't prove anything, as I said, from Tel and Amud, but I could prove myself from the case of Chulias HaBar. Why? Logically, it must be that part of the Chulias HaBar is within Dalet Tfachim in its proximity to the Mirpesis. Why? When we deal with Chulias HaBar, we're dealing not just with the Chulia, but with the bar itself as well. And that we see clearly from the Gemara on Daf Pei Dalet Amud Aleph, and Tosus there, Dibur HaMaskil HaChinami, that the Mishnah is talking about integrating the bar subterranean with the Chulia that's above ground in order to establish whether or not we have a Heter Tashmish to use the bar itself inside the bar. Now, the bar itself, we're going to try to prove, has to have a minimum width of 4 tefachim. Less than 4 tefachim won't do. Why? So this is based on the previous perek and the statement, the shita, and ruling of Shmuel on Daf Ayin Vav Amid Beis going on to Ayin Zayin Amid Aleph. What happens over there? This is the beginning of a perek that's called Chalon. And we have a case of two chatzeros with a window in between. And if the window has certain dimensions, it's above 10 tefachim, and it has 4x4 tefachim in width, then we consider the two chatzeros to be one, and one Erev is enough. And we have a similar case in a bar v'chulyaso that's located between two chatzeros. Now, if you take a look at the Gemara on Daf Ayin Vav Amud Beis, we will see the statement of Rav. Let's open up to Ayin Vav Amud Beis for just a moment. We have it. The Gemara says that Ein bo arba mai. We have a case of, for example, a wall between two chatzeros, and the issue is whether or not you can carry on each side of the wall from the chatzer up to the top of the wall. On top of the wall, you're allowed to carry. That's a Rishus HaYochid. It has a height of Asar Tfachim and a width of Dalet Tfachim. So within one part of the wall and the other, on the top, it's all Rishus HaYochid. That's Mutter. But with regard to taking it from the Chatzer up to the top, that's prohibited. Because the Rabbanan made a Gzera that if you take something from a Chatzer into a Rishus HaYochid, and this Rishus HaYochid is accessible to two Chatzeros, you must have an Eruv. However, what happens, the Gemara wants to know, if on top the chatzer is less than arba? Rav says, Avir shtei reshuyos sholtos bo lo yozes bo afilu neima. The reason why you can't carry on top is because unless you have an Erev chatzeros, you have an avir of shtei reshuyos. Each of the two chatzeros has access to the avir on top, and osro zualzu. When you have an area that is accessible, and it relates to two reshuyos, two chatzeros, then you must have an eruv. Then we turn to Daf Ayin Zayin Amud Aleph, and Rabbi Yochanan Omar, Elu mala mikan v'yochlin, and elu mala mikan v'yochlin, that there's no iser here to take from the chotzer up to the top of the wall. And why? Despite the fact that the wall may have a height, but it doesn't have a width of dalet al dalet tfachin. Rashi explains it's a makom p'tur, and you're allowed to carry from Rishus HaYochid to a makom p'tur. Therefore, each one of the b'nei chatzers on both sides of the wall are allowed to carry it on top. All because it's less than arba tfachin. Now, when we talk about bar b'chul yaso, if that bar is situated between two chatzeros, and the question is which one of the chatzeros has closer access, if it's equidistant to both of them, they both have access, then osro zu el zu. But again, Rabbi Yochanan is going to insist that that's only if the bar has four tfachim. If it doesn't have the width of four tfachim, then it becomes a makom p'tur, and then the halacha that osro zu el zu could not possibly apply, as we saw in the case of the wall. So just like in the wall that doesn't have 4x4 tfachim on top, each one of the Bnei Chatzer is allowed to carry up on top. So too, if you have a bar that's less than 4 tefachim in width, then each one of the two Bnei Chatzeros on the two sides of this bar would be allowed to have access to the bar and draw water for the bar, etc., because it's a makom p'tur. Therefore, by definition, when we're talking in the Mishnah here, at the beginning of Perek Ketzad Mishtatfim, on Daf Pei Gimel Amid Beis, about a bar, v'chul yaso, the bar itself has to have a minimum of 4 tefachim. Otherwise, there's no reason in the world why Rabbi Yochanan would deny that you can carry and draw water from the bar, because if it's less than 4 tefachim, it becomes a makom p'tur, it's completely batel mevutal, and each side can use it freely. Now, if we add the chulya on top, the chulya is on the sfasa bar, around the bar on top, on the ground space. So that means that the chulya is more than 4 tefachim, by definition. Now, what we have is a case of bar v'chul yaso smucha. Smucha means it's within 4 tefachim. Well, what's within 4 tefachim? It can't be that the entire bar is within 4 tefachim, because if the bar itself is 4 tefachim, and the chulya around the bar is an additional whatever distance, well, whatever thickness, call it a mashu, but whatever it is that goes beyond arba tefachim, then quite clearly, we have a proof now to our original question. Is it necessary for the entire bar, or in the reisha, in the case of an amud or a tail, to be totally within 4 tefachim? So Rashi quotes the case of chulya bar v'chul yaso, B'dibra maskel smucha, in order to illustrate that smucha means that it's got to be somewhere, one part of it, within the dalet tefachim. But clearly, the balance of the bar has to be, or some part of the bar has to be outside of dalet tefachim. So this is what Rashi perhaps wants to prove to us, that we view the entire amud, tail, or bar as one entity, and if part of it dips into the proximity of 4 tefachim, that's enough to be matir. And it's called smucha, again, assuming you have the 10 tefachim height, and therefore the b'nei ha-aliyah, or what we call the b'nei ha-mirpeses, will have a total access to use the avud, the tail, the bar, even though it's not all within dalet amos. That's what Rashi wants to drive home. Okay, then, this is the first half of our siyum for Masechta Erevin and Mitzvah Shem. We hope to conclude this siyum in a very short amount of time. In the context of our siyum for Masechta Erevin, as we said earlier this evening, we want to study the beginning of the 8th Perek, Perek Ketzad Mishtatf. And the discussion here revolves and addresses the case of a Rishus Shlishis. So you have Reuven's Rishus, you have Shimon's Rishus, and you have a third Rishus. That third Rishus might be accessible to both Reuven and Shimon, but is it on an equal level, or perhaps it's more noach tashmishto, it's more accessible and usable for one of the two, either for Reuven or for Shimon? So, for example, we could talk about a tail or an amud, which is discussed in the previous shiur, that is situated between the B'nai HaMirpeses and the B'nai HaChatzah on the bottom. And is it more noach for one than the other? The Mishnah establishes that if it's above 10 tefachim, it reaches within the sphere of the Mirpeses. They now have reshus and leniency. They're allowed to, they're permitted to use this amud or tail or sela, chulyas abar, and the other members of the chatzar on the bottom, on the ground floor, they don't have such access. But if it's less than 10 tefachim, then they have more access. So if you take a look at the Gemara here, right here on Pei Gimel and Beis, following the Mishnah, the Gemara establishes Pshita, Lazeb Pesach v'Lazeb Pesach, which means that both Chatzeros have equal and easy access to this third Rishus, Hainu Chalon Shebein Shtei Chatzeros, which means that just like we said, if there's a window between two Chatzeros, which is mentioned back at the beginning of the previous Perek Chalon and Ayin Vav, you need an Erev between the two Chatzeros, because the two Chatzeros merge into one through via this chalon that has certain proportions and so forth. So too, by analogy, if this amud is accessible to two reshuyos, then osro zu al zu, and we need an erev chatzeros. Lazeb is rika v'lazeb is rika. What happens if we have a third reshus located between two chatzeros, and it's not such easy access? Why? Because that it requires Zrika. You have an Amud that's very tall, it's 10 Tvachim high, and either the B'nai HaChatzeros, on this side or that side, in order to enjoy the benefit of the top of the Amud, they will have to throw something that's Bizrika. And once again, there's no preference of one Chatz or the other. They have an equal hassle, we'll call it, of Zrika, if they want to use the top of the top of the Kosa. For the then we have lezebishilshul v'lezebishilshul. What happens if you have a third reshus that's lower than the two chatzeros, the two reshuyos? They both need shilshul, which means they both have to throw it down. It's an uncomfortable kind of use, but the bottom line is they're equal and it has the same status as lezebipesach, lezebipesach, lezebizrika, lezebizrika. They're all equal, and osra zu al zu, they have the same heavy requirement or tircha in order to use this area that's below shilshul and so forth. And therefore, we need an erev chatzeros. What happens lazeb pesach v'lazeb zrika? Let's say that one chatz is higher than the other chatz. The accessibility, because of the height of the amud of 10 tefachim, is greater and it's easily used by the top chatzer, not the bottom chatzer. The bottom chatzer is going to need to do a zrika to throw it upwards from the bottom. Hainu de Rabba bar Rav Huna amar Rav Nachman, and in this case, we're going to give the use and permit the use of this amud to that chatzer that's on the same level as the amud, the higher chatzer. Lazeb pesach v'lazeb shulshul. Here we have a use of, let's say, a bar or something lower down, or perhaps the chatzeres are higher up. And for one chatzer, it's a pesach. All they need is to just stretch their arm out and they can enjoy the tail. It's 10 tefachim high. But for the other chatzah, because the other chatzah is even higher up on the second floor, they need to throw it down. So then, Hainu, the Rav Shizbi, Yomar Rav Nachman, all this is the sugis back on Daf Ayin Zayin, and we dedicate and we single out that tail for the benefit of the Pesach, meaning that chotzer that is not so high up and has easy access. But what happens in the case of lazeb b'shulshul v'lazeb b'zrika? The Gemara vacillates about the question of one chotzer that's higher than the tail, one chotzer that's lower than the tail. And in both cases, there's a distance of 10 tefachim. So the higher chutz has to throw it down 10 tfachim, that's called shilshul. The lower chutz there has to throw it up 10 tfachim, and that's called zrika. Here we have a machlokes amoroim between Rav and Shmuel. Rav, Omar Rav, Shneim Asurim. Rav seems to say that we don't differentiate between shilshul and zrika, we're not going to weigh them and measure if one is more comfortable, it's easier to throw down, it's easier to throw up, whatever it is. They're all equal, shove to shove. It goes back to the case of Pesach Lezeh, Pesach Lezeh, etc., etc. And Osrim Zualzu, we must have an Eruv. Shmuel Amar, Nosin Osol Lezeh Sheb Shulshul. It's a lot more comfortable, and it's a lot easier to throw something down. And therefore, Shalazeh, the Shulshul, the one who has a chutz that's higher up, and he's throwing down, Tashmisho Benachas, but Lazeh, the person who's on the lower chutz, and he has to throw it up, Tashmisho Bekosha. That's considered a difficult throw, a difficult use. It's not a noach tashmisho. It's not an easy and comfortable way of using it. And therefore, we're going to apportion and dedicate this area, this chutz, this rishus hashlishis, to the person who's up on top, and all he needs is shulshul to use this rishus hashlishis. And now Shmuel formulates a klal. Klal shekol davishes tashmisho lezeh benachas v'lezeh bekosher nosen oso lezeh shetashmisho benachas. If it's difficult for one relative, the other one is easy, it's more noach, it's more accessible, usable, etc., then we give permission to the one who has tashmisho benachas. Again, even though it's not really tashmisho benachas in this case, it's shilshul. And shilshul is still tashmisho kosher, but relative to the guy who is on the bottom and has to throw it up with a zrika, shilshul is considered tashmisho benachas. Let's ask the following two questions. Question number one. Why is it that Shmuel feels compelled to introduce a principle here, to coin a new principle, when in truth, Rav doesn't disagree with that principle? Rav also agrees that we apportion and dedicate the area to that which is Tashmisho Benachas. Lezeh Benachas, Lezeh B'Koshen, Oso Lezeh Shetashmisho Benachas. Rav never denied that. Rav only argued that when we compare Zrika and Shilshul, we do not classify it or define it as Zeh B'Koshen and Zeh Benachas. Why? Because they're both in a difficult straits. They both need an extra effort to use this tail. Or alternatively, you could say, according to Rav, maybe there is a discrepancy. Maybe it's a little bit easier to throw something down than to throw something up. But that discrepancy doesn't warrant, it doesn't justify your conclusion that Shilshul is Benachas, and relative to Shilshul, Zrika is Bekosha. The increment here, the differential, is not so significant that we broaden this and make it Zeh Kosha, Zeh Nachas. But again, the point is that Rav fundamentally accepts this principle that kol tashmisho benachas v'lezeh bekosha nosen oso lezeh shetashmisho benachas. So why does Shmuel coin this principle, coin this phrase? That's question number one. Question number two is a Tosfos here, Dibur HaMaschil Kosalka Daitach. You'll see it on Pei Gimel and Beis, and it's the last Tosfos on the Daf. And if you count up about 7-8 lines from the bottom of Tosfos, Tosfos writes, V'afal pisha yoredim ba min alios u'mishtamshim ba, eino oseres, kevon desulam toras mechitza ola. Now, Tosfos is talking about a case where you have diurim, you have people living, residing in the Alios on a very high level, so it's more than 10 tfachim above, from the Alios, above the tail. In order for the Bnei Alios to have access to the tail, they have to go down a ladder. that ladder will lead them to the Merpeses, and from the Merpeses they have comfortable access to the, you know, to the tail. Setosa says that Sulam Toras Mechitza Olav. Now it seems that what Tosis has in mind here is that we don't view the Sulam, even though again it makes it easy for, in the case of the Bnei Aliyahs, to climb down and get access to this tail, because they climb down from the Aliyah down to the Merpeses. We don't view it in terms of what's easy and what's noach. We view it in terms of a different shaila, and that is, how do we define a sulam? And the Gemara is going to have many discussions about this as we go through the perek, whether sulam is defined as a mechitza. If it's defined as a mechitza, then it's not defined as a pesach. And therefore, we're not going to have a situation where the Bnei Alios generate an Iser on the Bnei HaChatzer or the Bnei HaMirpeses, wherever they live, simply because the Bnei HaLios have access by using a Sulam. That Sulam is not to be classified and defined as a Pesach, but rather it's a Mechitza. And that again goes according to one Mandiomer that identifies a Sulam as a Mechitza. So in a certain sense, since the Sulam doesn't rate as a Pesach, we don't consider it as if the Bnei Aliyah on the top level have immediate access and use of the Amud or the tail, because the Sulam is a Mechitza. And that's good news for the Bnei HaChatzer, because they can use, and they have a head to Tashmish as far as the Amud or the tail is concerned, because there's no one else who's Osros Zu Al Zu. And the question that we want to ask here on this Tosfos is, what difference to make whether the Sulam is considered a Mechitza or a Pesach? How do you define it? It seems to be irrelevant. All that we have to determine is whether it's Tashmish or Benachas or not. And if the Bnei Aliyah can simply climb down this ladder and have access to the level below, even if it's 10 tefachim to go down, it's very easy access. And we should say, therefore, even despite the fact that the Sulam is defined as a Mechitza, nevertheless, we should be Mevatel the Rishus of the Amud to the Bnei Aliyos, which again will generate an Iser as far as the Bnei HaChatzer Lamata are concerned. And it's very interesting now, because Tosfos is justifying the Gemara's Kasha on Rav. Let's read the Gemara again. The Gemara says, after quoting this machlokus between Rav and Shmuel explained his reasoning based on the klal, as we called it, called Dover Shetashmish Lezeh Benachas, Vilezeh Bekoshin Osin Osol Lezeh Shebenachas. Tanan, we have a mission that says, Anshei Chotzemi Anshei Merpeses Sheshochachu Velo Erevu. So it means you have, let's call it 20 tefachim height to the Bnei Aliyah, you have 10 tefachim height to the Bnei Merpeses. And the Mishnah says, Kol shegavah asor tefachim merpeses, pochus mikan lechotzer. Kasalka daitoch, my merpeses, b'nei aliyah. The Gemara at this point, when it reads the Mishnah, thinks that merpeset means a reference to the floor on top of the merpeset. And my koile merpeset, the kasalki b'merpeset, when they exit from their apartments, on the Aliyah, they go down to the Merpeset, and that's how they get out of the building. And now Alma says, the Gemara, Kol lazeh b'shilshul, lazeh b'zrika, nosa nosa lazeh b'shilshul. Why does the Mishnah establish that we dedicate this Amud or Tel to the B'nai Aliyah? That's how we're interpreting it. If it's Gavah Asara, after all, this is a case of lazer bizrika, meaning, although it's true that the Bnei HaChatzer will have to throw it up, lazer bizrika, but the Bnei HaLiyah will throw it down. And the Gemara is now asking, well, this seems to prove Shmuel that we're going to dedicate this to those who are on top if it's above 10 tefachim. The Gemara is going to reject this interpretation immediately, but right now, and the reason why we're doing so is because Zrika is more difficult than Shilshul, so that the lower Chatzer has a need to be Zorek in order to get it onto this Amud or tail, whereas the Bnei Aliyah, who are more than 10 tefachim above this Amud, they have an easy match of Shilshul, and therefore we're going to dedicate this for the use of the Bnei Aliyah. And that's a proof to Shmuel, because Rav holds that Zrika and Shilshul are Shavah B'Shavah, they're equal. It's like Zela Pesach, Zela Pesach. We don't understand the Gemara's kash over here. Why does Gemara think that in this case, because of the 10 tefachim height of the Bnei Aliyah, it becomes a problem for Rav? After all, in terms of the use, what difference does it make once it hits 10 tefachim in height? In both cases, it's just a matter of shilshul, just lowering whatever you want to lower on top of the omen to use the omen. And again, we're seeing echoes of what Tosus calls mechitza over here. Why should that make a difference? If we're talking about Noach Tashmishto, and we're trying to figure out whether it is Noach Tashmisho or not, or it's kosher, then it would seem that the 10 tefachim should be irrelevant. If it's shilshul and he can throw it down and that's comfortable, that should be enough. Let's add a statement here of the Ritva Afanort in the name of Tosfos Rabbeinu Peretz. The Ritva writes, Afilu l'Rav, Shehu mashveh shilshul l'zrika, even though Rav says that shilshul and zrika on the same level, the Shava B'Shava, Kol sheyotza mitoras Pesach l'shneem, lo shonilon ben koch echad lebeis kochos, v'shilshul uzrika dechad gisa, v'zrika de'idok gisa, shavim he. Says the Ritva in the name of Tosfos Rabbeinu Peretz, that this whole discussion here about Rav comparing Shilshul to Zrika, and he says it's Shavah B'Shavah, that's only when it's a case of Yotza Mitoras Pesach L'Shneh. Neither one, the Meshalshel on top or the Zorik on the bottom, has a Pesach. And Yotza Mitoras Pesach L'Shneh, now Rav says we're not going to make any differences. We're not going to say that Shilshul is more Noach than Zrika, and even in a case where you need Shnei Kochos, which means that you're going to have to throw it up and then it comes down, as opposed to someone who throws it up and it lands right away, he doesn't need a second Koch. All those differentiations go down the, you know, they go by the wayside. Why? Because we're lacking a Toras Pesach. That's the phrase of the Ritva. It's quite clear from the Ritva then when Rav disagrees with Shmuel, it's not because he thinks that Shilshul and Zrika are Shava B'Shava in terms of Noach Tashmisho. There's no issue here, well, how great of a distance is there, you know, how wide of a gap is there between Shilshul and Zrika. But rather, Rav agrees to Shmuel that Shilshul is a lot easier than Zrika, and certainly in a case where Zrika requires two kochos, has to go up and then come down. But rather, says the Ritva, in the name of Tosfos Rabbeinu Peretz, that Rav disagrees fundamentally about the whole geder, the way that the Chachamim enacted and defined this Rishus Shlishis. Shmuel holds that the issue of who will get use of the Rishus Shlishis is simply a matter of Tashmish, who has the easier Tashmish. And the Mela, once it's easier for him, let's say the Meshalshel from on top, as opposed to the Zorik from the bottom, he's going to get Rishus to use it. Rav didn't understand it like that. Rav understood that the way that Chachamim made this Takana was that the third Rishus becomes swallowed up, so to speak, by one of the other two Rishuyos. We're going to merge the third Rishus with one Rishus. According to Rav, Noach Tashmishto is not enough. you need what's called a mitzarif. What is that mitzarif? What is that agent that allows you to connect these two reshuyos and make them into one, to unify them? The answer is a Pesach. And a Pesach means an opening that's less than 10 tfach. Once the opening is more than 10 tfachim, it becomes a mechitza. And a mechitza is not a Pesach. And a mechitza prevents a tziruf between the reshus shlishes and your reshus when you want to unify and extend your reshus to swallow up and envelop the third reshus. You need an agent that's mitzarif, and you need a Pesach. If you don't have a Pesach, then the Ritva is saying in the name of Rabbeinu Peretz, Rav says that you don't get exclusive rights and a heter to use it. Not like Shmuel, who says, well, you get the exclusive rights and the heter to use it because it's Noach Tashmishto, you're in a superior position vis-a-vis the other chotzer. Nein, Rav needs a Pesach. Says the Ritva, if there's a 10 tefachim distance, which means it's not a Pesach, then Rav would say, I'm not going to shoot the dice here and figure out, evaluate, weigh which one of the two chatzeros has more of a Noach Tashmisho. That's not going to be enough, because I need a Pesach, and I don't have a Pesach. I have the 10 tefachim of a mechitza. And if that's the way Rav understood, that in the case of a Rishus Shlishis, that has to now become part of another Rishus, it's got to be swallowed up, and we have to have a mitzarev, and we need for that a Pesach, then we begin to understand why Tosfos says that a sulam, if the only way that the Bnei Aliyah could get access to the amud or the tail that's 10 fucking below, is sulam is a mechitza. What does Tosfos mean when he says the sulam is a mechitza? What difference did it make, we asked? How this distance of 10 tefachim, what does it make it that much difference and more difficult when he does a shilshul? The answer is that's not enough. You need a mitzaref. And the mitzaref has to be the sulam. And the sulam cannot serve as a mitzaref is if we define it and classify it as a mechitza. And now, if that be the case, we begin to appreciate why Shmuel was the one who formulated this klal. And what he was doing with this klal is he was arguing against Rav. And he was saying in the klal, again, we'll read it once more, that kol shenoach lezeh velo lezeh, if it's more noach to one of them than the other, then, says Shmuel, it's designated for him as opposed to him. And I called over shetashmisho lezeh benachas velo lezeh bekosher, according to Shmuel, we don't have to create a mitzarif. We don't have to extend one reshus and have the reshus shlishes be swallowed up into the reshus. No, all we need is Noach Tashmisho. Noach Tashmisho itself is going to give you the heter. That's what Shmuel is coining in this principle. Rav never accepted that. Rav required a Pesach. And the Pesach serves as a mitzarif. And therefore, Rav is going to tell you that even if it's more noach in the shilshul case, but if we don't have a Pesach because there's a 10 tefachim gap, that's considered a mechitza, or if we need a sulam in Tosfos' frame of reference, then there's no way of extending the reshus shlishis and have it swallowed up to the other reshus. There's no mitzarif. And that's what the Ritva means in the name of Tosfos Rabbeinu Peretz. Kol sheyotza mitoras Pesach l'shneim, Lo Shani Lan, it doesn't matter whether it's Koach Echad, Shnei Kochos, whether it's Noach B'Shulshul as opposed to Noach, less Noach, and it's Kosher in Zrika, all that goes down the wayside, because all we care about now is whether or not we have a Torah's Pesach. In effect, this Chakira between Rav and Shmuel really is a Chakira between Metzius and Din to some extent. Shmuel makes it all depend on Metzius, and therefore it's Memela, that the one who has Noach Tashmisho better access, he's mutter. Rav is looking for a halachic category, and that is a Toras Pesach. Therefore, according to Rav, in the absence of a Toras Pesach, there's no heter Tashmish, even if it's Noach Tashmisho. And with this, we end our our siyum on Masechta Erevin, Hajan Alecha Masechta Erevin. I want to thank you all. A great Yashikayach. We put in a great effort. Of course, we need a lot of chazara, but od chazon amoy. Shikayach and Masechta.